Okay, we begin here on the top of Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, two lines down. We're continuing the discussion from yesterday about how the Gemara resolved the stira, or seeming contradiction, between our Mishnah and the Braita. The Braita required to be done the Chazaka b'fanav, whereas our Mishnah doesn't have that requirement to b'fanav. The Gemara solved that problem with the language of Leich Chazek Uknei, that when you do it in front of the individual, you don't need the instruction, you don't need the guide to say Lik Chazek Uknei. Whereas in a case where the seller is not present, you need his instruction for the chazaka to take on significance and meaning. And so therefore he has to instruct you to say Lik Chazek Uknei, and then you go ahead and do one of these activities. So now Bai Rav, Rav asked on this issue, Matana Hayach. How does it work by a gift? So now Rav's question is that by Mecher you have a tension in the situation, which is that in some senses you have an unwilling seller, and then you have a buyer who's trying to acquire it. And the reason this seller is unwilling in general is because people don't like to sell their assets. The Gemara in many places notes that people really only sell because they're under duress, they need liquidity. So over here you have a party who has to give up control, and you have a party who's trying to acquire control. So in that case, the giving up of control can be done in one of two ways. Either observing the koneh going in there and taking possession of the land and not objecting, or that can be accomplished through the instruction of Leich Chazek Uknei. On the other hand, by a matana, which is willing gift to the other party, may be subsumed in the fact that it is a gift. It's as if you said Leich Chazek Uknei. It's as if you actually articulated those words when you gave the gift, as the Rashbam says over here, it's as if he said to him, it's implied in the gifting of the object to the individual, because you're giving it voluntarily. You're giving this on a unilateral basis. The fact that you're already giving it means that you want him to go take possession of the property. Is that how we view it? Or do we say that a person still has reservations when they give a gift, and that until they say Leich Chazek Uknei, there's no finalization to the gift? That's Rav's question. Amar Shmuel, Maiti Bai Lele Abo. Shmuel says, what is the safek of Rav? Why is Rav in doubt about a matana? Hashto says it's very simple. Ma mecher deka yohim fle zuzei. In the case of a sale where there's money exchanging hands, I amar Leich Chazek Uknei in, if you get the instruction to take possession of it, it works. Ila lo. If not, it doesn't. Matana, lokoshikein. By matana, where there is no consideration that is being exchanged over here, certainly you would need that additional instruction. So what Shmuel is saying is, if you look at Mecher, Mecher has the consideration, which makes it that the individual should have a right to take possession over here, because he's given money to the seller. So offsetting what I said before with regards to Rav's position, which is a seller is an unwilling party. On the other hand, the buyer here is an active participant. He is giving consideration for the property that should gain him rights. Nevertheless, we still say that the mocher needs to say Leich Chazek Uknei even after the money has been exchanged. And that the Rashbam points out over here, that this has to be in a situation or a place where kotzvin shtar, where they write a shtar to finalize the sale, and therefore the giving of the money is not sufficient to generate the kinyan. So if you gave the money and then the seller says Leich Chazek Uknei, then it works. So over here by a matana, where the recipient of the matana is doing absolutely nothing, he's given no consideration, and he's not an active participant in the sale, over there certainly you would have to say Leich Chazek Uknei. You would need the seller to be a more active participant in giving up his rights. So we're trying to coax the rights of the seller away from him to be granted to the buyer. The question is, what does that? Is it the consideration that softens him up? And there you would have thought that consideration makes it that you could do it unilaterally and you could take possession. We still demand Leich Chazek Uknei. By a matana, where there is no consideration, then certainly you would have to say Leich Chazek Uknei. Or do we say that in the case of matana, the whole point of a matana is that he is giving it unilaterally, that he's giving it willingly. He's not being compelled by the money. He's not being compelled by the circumstances to sell the property. And so therefore, when he says or grants you the right to take it, we say, go ahead. You've got full permission to take it. And therefore, you wouldn't even need Leich Chazek Uknei. That's the safek of Rav. Shmuel says, I don't see the safek. I see this all being lopsided, which is that by mecher you require it. Certainly by matana you do require it. V'Rav Savar, why Rav thinks differently than Shmuel is, because man deyoyiv matana bain yofe yayiv. That a person who grants a gift gives it in a generous manner or the most generous manner. Which is what we've been describing until now, that Rav's tzad of the safek is the fact that it's a unilateral voluntary gift. And so by definition, you would assume that the other party could take possession of it, or the gifter wants you to take possession of it immediately. You don't need a special instruction to take possession of it. Now, as the Rashbam points out, and so did the Balei HaTosafot, it's not that Shmuel fundamentally disagrees with this position that a person who gives a gift gives generously. But what the Rashbam and the Balei HaTosafot point out is, the question is, at what threshold does that become true? For Rav, that becomes true immediately. As soon as the person is gifted the property, then anything associated with that property, we're going to look at it in a positive light. We're going to look at it as in a most generous manner. On the other hand, for Shmuel, what he will say is, once the gift has been accepted, and now we're trying to determine what was gifted, then we'll say that which was gifted is in the most generous fashion. But to determine whether the gift actually was a gift, there we don't say generous or not generous, because the gift has yet to be finalized, has yet to be consummated. So you want the gift to be consummated. Once that happens, then you can talk about generous gifting or miserly gifting. But until that point in time, just because you're a generous gifter doesn't mean that you actually gifted the property to the individual. And so the machloket is, where does this apply? Rav would say that this applies even at the moment of kinyan. We still look at the generosity of the individual, and therefore we assume that he would be as magnanimous as possible. The generosity of the individual begins from the moment of the gift. Whereas for Shmuel, the generosity only starts once the gift is in your hands, and now we're trying to determine what was gifted. That's when the generosity starts, and that gives us the difference in their opinion. So now the Gemara moves on to another question. It leaves the issue of matanah, about which Rav and Shmuel argue, unresolved. V'kama. Going back to now Gadaru Paratz, the Gemara asks, how much do you need to do? My answer is, kol shehu, any amount would suffice in terms of nal gadar uparatz. We have no minimum shiur. You just have to do something that is effective in order to make the acquisition or have the kinyan be efficacious through a nal gadar uparatz. So kol shehu means any amount. Kiddush Shmuel, like Shmuel explained, damar Shmuel, gadar, gader, person who puts up a fence, vishlimu l'asara, and then he finishes the fence up to 10 tefachim. Uparatz pirza kedesh ikanes. Or he breached some amount to enter. Via tzaba. And then he went out through it, or he entered through it. Harizo chazaka. That is considered to be a chazaka. So over here, first of all, there's the absence of one of the items, which is, we had nal gadar uparatz. Na'al here doesn't seem to be addressed in terms of nal koshuhu. The way that we learned yesterday, or the machloket that we saw yesterday between the Rashbam and the Balei HaTosafot, as to whether it means simply locking the door, or does it mean actually putting in a new locking mechanism? So for the explanation of the Balei HaTosafot, what it means to lock the door, then it would be very easy to explain a koshu, which is that you just locked it for a period of time where you blocked other people's access to the area. For the Rashbam, v'gabi nal koshu nami ika lefrushe ki hayabno. You can explain the same way that we explained with regards to the doorway, Shesatam Petach Stima Koshu, Timikari Aile Babravka Vashta Aile Labaduchaka, that he locked up a portion of the doorway, which was easy to access before, and now he made it a little more difficult to the access, so it would be the opposite of the case of opening up the door. Inami Shikavaman Ol Badelit in Obo. He put a lock into the door in order to lock it, Dainu Binyan, because that is an action of significance, because he's changed the door. But, as we noted yesterday, the Rashbam then goes on to say that if you simply close the door and lock it, that would not be considered a na'al koshuhu. So either you have to explain na'al as by definition being something that is koshuhu, or maybe there's just no relevance of koshuhu to na'al, and that's why it's absent over here. Gemara is dealing with the gadar and paratz, where koshuhu could be relevant. So now, Shmuel gives us the case of putting up a fence. An offense where you move from less than 10 tefachim to above 10 tefachim. In that situation, you have a halachic threshold. 10 tefachim is the minimum standard for a wall, what is classified as a wall in halacha. So in terms of looking at the wall from a halachic perspective, you have done something significant, which is you moved the wall from something that is not classified as a wall to something that is classified as a wall. But that halachic significance over here may not be enough to acquire the property. The significance that we need over here, in some senses, is a demonstration of ownership. And somehow you have changed the dynamic of the field in what you've done. So if you simply take it from below 10 to above 10, that would not be sufficient just because you created a halachically significant wall. Elaim Kain, you changed the dynamic about how this wall affects people's access to the field. And that's what the Gemara is about to discuss. When we look at this wall, what happened that changed from that which was before? And the Rishbam points out over here that the topography of the field could affect that, which is that even though normally we would classify a wall that is 10 tefachim high as a wall of significance, and again, the halachic significance is because it has physical significance, then you would say, what's the question? If you went from below 10 to above 10, you put a wall in place. Doesn't matter how much you added to the wall. The answer is that the topography of the field might make it that either a 10 tefachim high wall is not doing anything, if, for instance, it's in a depression in the land, or there's a incline or decline that comes near the wall, which would make it that it's easy for you to get over the wall, and it doesn't really create a significance in moving above 10 tefachim, or the opposite way around. The wall could be sitting on top of a ridge, in which you don't even need the 10 tefachim to make it significant, because it would be significant below 10 tefachim. So the Gemara wants to understand, what is the significant action that you took here, without considering that 10 tefachim is a significant number in halacha, because sometimes that significance could be muted by the topography of the field. In terms of what you're saying, it's true that in many places in halacha, once we've determined what the shiur is, it's irrelevant whether the wall is or isn't functioning in the way that it's supposed to be. But over here, remember, we're not looking for an halachic outcome. Here, we're looking at an action that creates a chazoka for the person to take possession of the property. So this is not simply a halachic question. It's a question of significance vis-a-vis your interaction with the property. It's not a halachic question of significance of wall. It's a halachic question of the significance of your interaction with the property. It's clear that the Gemara believes that the koshu over here doesn't literally mean a koshu. It means a koshu that is of significance. I have the same question, melachot and Shabbos, for instance, binyan. The Gemara says, binyan koshu. Gemara says, what binyan koshu can you do that is significant? Gemara says, you drill an air hole in the chicken coop. So there you have a koshu that has significance because you've done something that is significant in your koshu. The same thing over here. The koshu is not a literal koshu. The koshu means that through a koshu, I've done an action that is significant. And again, the halacha that we're focused on here is kinyan, not on wall building. So therefore, even though you create a halachically significant wall, that doesn't change the fact that you haven't done anything with me vis-a-vis the property. And the Gemara is going to explain it. Hai gader echidami. This wall, what exactly is the situation? So either the Gemara could be explaining what is meant by kol shehu before, or the way the Rashbam and others went over here is trying to explain what the significance of Shmuel's statement was. What happened here that changed, that makes it that there is actually a difference in what was before and that which was afterwards that grants you the kinyan in this case. If in the past you couldn't get access to the property, and now too you can't get access to the property, then what did you do? I mean that the wall was significant or sufficient to block access to the property before, and now you're adding Bakoshu, who has done absolutely nothing to change that dynamic. Vela, dimi karavu saukila, vashtalo saukila. If it is that originally you did have access to the property, and then your koshu prevents there being access to the property, tuva ovod. That's a significant action. That's significant enough that it wouldn't even be a question that your koshu would create a kinyan over here because you've done something that is very significant vis-a-vis your interaction with the property. Before people had access to the property, now they do not have access to the property. Lo, tzricha, demikarva, visalkila, biravcho, that in the past they were able to get in and out of there with ease. Vahashta kalsakila, biduchuka. Now you made it more difficult for them to enter or egress from the land. And given that, your koshu has significance to it. So you see what the Gemara is doing. The Gemara is clear, if you take an action that changes dramatically the dynamic or the interaction with the property, there's no question that you have a kinyan in that case. If you do absolutely nothing, it's also clear that you don't get a kinyan on the property. What they want to know is, where do you have a kosho that lacks that full significance of action, but still has done something to change the dynamic that allows you to make a kinyan? And that's what the Gemara describes over here. Kosho, where you used to have a nice wide entranceway to the field. For instance, it was fence around the field. People could jump the fence before, and it was easy to jump the fence. Now your little kosho made it that it is a little more difficult to jump the fence. So now you've changed the ability of people to access the field. That's enough, or that's significant enough to grant you a kinyan in the field. The breach in the wall, which we said could be a kosho also, how exactly does that work? The way the Rashbam reads the Gemara over here, these two questions of high gader, hechidami, high pirza, hechidami, is referencing back to Shmuel's statement that the kosho was enough to generate a kinyan in these cases. You could possibly read these questions of the Gemara completely independently, which is the Gemara wants to know what's the case of gader and what is the case of pirza. But the way the Rashbam reads it, in the simplest way to make sense of it, is that Shmuel made a statement about hishlimu le'asara, or parza kadesh yikanes v'yetzeba. And we want to understand now Shmuel's statement. Of course, if you opened up a doorway, or you put up doors, or you closed a wall, then of course you're going to make a kinyan. So what is Shmuel adding for us? The answer is that Shmuel's adding for us the explanation of what a kosho is. And then in that kosho, we have to understand why we wouldn't have necessarily thought that that was the case. Because if it's so significant, you don't need Shmuel. If it's insignificant, then Shmuel's statement makes no sense. So we're trying to find something that sits in the middle here, that is nuanced enough that Shmuel's statement is a chiddush with regards to kosho. So I pierce a echidami. Ilemi demi karava aili ba. If you want to say, until now, they were able to enter through this doorway, and now they still are able to enter through this doorway, Mayobot, you didn't do anything. You say before they didn't have access to the field because of the lack of a doorway. And now you breached the wall to the point where people can enter over there. That's an action of significance. It's so significant, there's no question that you have a kinyan through that. Originally, they had to squeeze through this opening to get through. But your little removal over here gave more width or space to the doorway. And now people walk in comfortably versus before where they had to squeeze their way in. So you didn't change the fact that people were able to enter the property. They were able to enter before, they were able to enter now. What you did change is the manner in which they enter. Before they entered with a little difficulty, now you made it easy for them to enter the field. So this is the same thing, just in the opposite of what we said before with the gader, that the fence is preventing access, and the pirza is allowing for access. So the fence, we said, you have to move from a situation in which it was easy to either leave the field or enter the field, to a point where now you're stopping them from entering or exiting the field. So you have to do something that changes it from the ease of entering and exiting to the point where now it's a little more difficult. And pirza is just the opposite. Pirza is trying to facilitate access to the field. And if you already have access, then you've done nothing by continuing to grant that access. If there was no access and you created access, that's significant. If there was access that was difficult and now you made it easier, that's what we're referring to as a kosho over here. So that's a kosho that has significance, but not so much significance that it's obvious that there is a kinyan over here. Amar Rabbi Yasi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Natan Tzror Vehoil, Natal Tzror Vehoil, Arzeh Chazaka. A person puts in a small stone, a pebble, and it helps. Or he removes a stone, and it helps. Arizot Chazaka. That is considered to be a Chazaka. The Gemara again here is going to query as to what situation exactly are we speaking about over here. My Natan Umay Natal. What exactly is going on here with putting this stone in and taking it out that has so much significance? Ilema Natan Sror V'Sachar Mayo. So he put the stone in, and that basically plugged the water, or you created a dam. There was a wall, there was something holding back the water with a little hole in it. You put the stone in, and that plugged the hole. Natal Sror V'Afik Mayamina. Pull the stone out, and that allows the water to leave. Hi. Mavriach ari minichsei chaverohu. Over there, all you're doing is preventative measures. You're not doing something that is active. Mavriach harim nechsei chaverohu is a terminology that we bumped into in Bava Kamma and Nidarim. It's a terminology that really represents the idea that you took preemptive action or preventative measures that benefits your friend, but on the other hand, there is no direct action that you are doing to benefit your friend. So if you prevent damage from happening to your friend, then in some senses you haven't given him anything. You've just withheld damage from happening to him. So in that sense, you have provided benefit, but the benefit is the prevention of loss rather than the active giving of benefit to your friend. And so the Gemara in Nedarim and Bava Kamma is speaking about Mavriach Harim Nechsei Chaveiro. Whether, first of all, are you in violation of a neder? When you take a neder not to benefit your friend, is that a violation of the neder if you prevent losses from him rather than giving him something actively? And in the Gemara in Bava Kamma, it discusses the obligation of someone to pay for services. When someone provides you a service that provided you a benefit, is this considered to be a benefit that you would have to pay for their services? Here they intervened to protect your property. So yes, they prevented a loss from happening, but they didn't give you something tangible, active, and therefore maybe you're not obligated to compensate. So that's where the term Mavriach Harim Nechsei Chaveiro is used. The way that the Gemara terms it then is, if one does such a thing for their friend, it is Kimeshiv Aveidah. It's the equivalent of giving back an Aveidah, which is that you have, and this is the way the Rashbam formulates it over here, that you have a mitzvah to take care of your friend. Every Jew is enjoined to make sure that his friend's property is protected, that you take interest in the fact that no damage or bad happens to your friend. So you have to do that to prevent hezek. Vein karui chazaka. And that's not called a chazaka. Ela dumya de gadaru paratz. You have to do something similar to gadaru paratz. Shosebo binyan o kol tikun atzarich lo lasadeh. Where you're taking active action with regards to the field itself. So again, it's talking about engagement rather than prevention of loss. So you need to be engaged and do something active with the property in order to be classified as a chazaka. If all you're doing is simply preventing losses from happening, that would not work. So over here, if you put a stone in and then you dam the water so it wouldn't get into the field, or on the other hand, you pulled the stone out to allow the water to drain out of the field. In all these cases, you have a mavriach ari minechsei chaveiro, because all you're doing is preventing damage to the field, either by not allowing the water to flood the field. There was a flood or a river coming to overflow or wash away the field, and you put in that plug to stop the water from coming in. Or in a case where the water starts to build up in the field, it's going to flood the field or wash away the field, and you unplug it to allow the water to escape from the field. In both of those cases, you are a mavriach ari minechsei chaveiro, and that will not grant you a chazak in the field. So in all these cases, you are doing something that's preventative in nature, but not something that is active in nature. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom formulates it over here is, Ha'im maitzah de'meimar le'anotein o echad min achim mitzvah avadata. You did a mitzvah. Shesalta nechsai. You saved my property. Kichein chuvah le'bayir Yisrael. That is what every Jew's obligation is. Lahatzil mamon chaveiro. V'lo avi chazaka. And therefore it's not a chazaka. To be engaged in the mitzvah of loss prevention does not grant you a chazaka, because that's not something that you're doing outside of what you're commanded to do. These are your normal obligations, and you haven't done anything that is independent of your obligation. And so therefore, through that, you cannot gain a chazaka if you're simply doing what you are enjoined to do. Or you could express it simply that in order to create a chazaka, you need to do something active, engage, or tikkun in the field. The fact that you've done nothing with the field except simply protect it from losses or prevent something from happening to the field, that can again establish a chazaka. So either way, either because you are enjoined to do this mitzvah, and therefore your action cannot double as a mechanism for acquisition, Or because you're not doing anything active to the field, you're unable to create a chazaka or establish ownership over here. Ella. So the case must be, Natan Tzuror, Ditzamad Lamayo, Natal Tzuror, Ve'avach Lamayo. So a case here where there was already, for instance, water coming into the field. So now the water is coming into the field, but it's coming in at a trickle, it's coming in at a slower pace. So you pull out a stone, which is Ve'avach La. That widens the hole by which the water can enter. And so now you've created a smoother, a bigger flow. It's the equivalent of what we said before by the Pirtza. Before, you were able to enter the field with difficulty. Now you're able to enter the field easily. Same thing over here. The water before trickled or came in a more difficult manner. Your pulling away of the stone makes it that the water enters in a more flowing fashion. And so there what you've done is basically watered the field. By doing that, you've made it easier, you've given the field watering, mashkesadeh, that's an active engagement with the property, that's giving benefit to the property, therefore you create a chazakah in that acquisition. So then, Natan Tzuror, and the case of placing the stone in, is a case where the water is in the field, and it's gonna leave the field. For instance, there's a drain that's gonna allow all the water to drain, and therefore won't water the field. So you did was, ditzamadla mayo. You did a tzemed, the way that the Rashbam explains the word tzemed is michaber. Yeah, you sealed it up. You narrowed the hole or you closed the drain in some senses. That could be the kosher. You just put a cover on the drain. That's enough to be considered a significant action because now you're allowing the field to be watered by trapping the water inside of the field. So here you have a kosher that has significance. Whereas before your kosher was loss prevention. Over here your kosher now becomes an active engagement in the property of watering the field. And that will give you the right to acquire the field or have a chazakah in this case. That statement we just saw from Rav Asi, Rabbi Yochanan, and now we're going to have a second statement from Rav Asi, Rabbi Yochanan. From the context of our Gemara, it would seem that we're talking about, again, nichsei ager. We're talking about either a gift or nichsei ager, where there is no counterparty that you are dealing with. And since you have no counterparty, the question is, what is considered to be a significant enough chazakah to take possession of the property in these situations? I'm Rav Asi and Rav Yochanan. Shtei sadot u'meitzar achad b'nehem. You have two fields, and you have some sort of border that sits between them. And the way that the Rashbam explains it over here, the topography of the border is different. So either it is a ditch, it's a path, it is a wall of some sort, there's stones along there. It's a possibility it's demarcating the border between the properties. But whatever it is, that meitzar does not have the same utility as the field itself. Hekzik be'achat mehem liknota. He takes possession of one of them in order to acquire it. Kana. You are successful at acquiring it. On the other hand, liknot ota v'at et chaverta. If you want to acquire the property that you are in, plus the adjacent property, ota kana, you are successful at acquiring the property that you're in. Chaverta lo kana. You are not successful at acquiring the adjacent property. Liknot et chaverta. He's in this property trying to acquire the other property. Afota lo kana. Even the property that you're standing in, you are not successful at acquiring. So again here, if you're speaking about nechse ager, you're talking about a matana, then we're talking about a lack of consideration over here. Since there's a lack of consideration, it's not obvious what you are taking possession of. And so therefore your actions are significant as to what you take possession of. You can take possession of a field in which you are acting or doing something within the field that you are in. The adjacent field, there's nothing to connect between you and the adjacent field. The main reason being that there's a meitzar between them. There's some sort of natural division or even man-made division between the properties. And so therefore your action here has no significance in the other property. So that's why you would be unable to acquire one with the other. Even though we know in the Gemara and Kiddushin, Gemara and Kiddushin told us that if you purchased 10 properties and you did a chazakah on one of the 10 properties, you acquire all 10 properties. The Gemara and Kiddushin qualified that statement and said that's only true where he's paid the money or the consideration for all the properties, thereby connecting the properties. Over there, the money is what joins the properties together because the sum that you gave clearly meant that you were going to engage or you were purchasing all 10 properties. Then your chazakah or acquisition of one of those properties is significant vis-a-vis all the properties. The Gemara calls it sadna de'ara chad hu. that the crust of the earth is all one, meaning that the land is all connected somehow. Therefore, when you take an action on one piece of land, it affects all the other pieces. How come we don't say that over here? The key differentiating factor here is that there is no consideration. Here you're trying to be mukzik in the property of a ger. You're trying to take possession of a gift. There is no money or consideration that gives us a sizing or a connection between the properties. So therefore, each acquisition has to be significant in of itself and relate to the object that you're dealing with. And so if you take possession of one piece of property, it will not grant you automatically a right to the other piece of property. Whereas by the case of mecher, where there is consideration, that can help to aggregate the properties into a single unit, by which you can then make an acquisition on one and it'll affect all of them. That's the way that the Rashbam expresses it. And the Baal Tosafot say something similar, which is, V'achav enikse ager matana, V'afagav de'in mechutzurim damim. Even though there's no lack of consideration, once you take possession of it, it's yours. We call makom lo v'kem mecher shenatan lo d'mei kulan. It's different than a transaction where you paid the whole amount. And that's what aggregates all the units here to make them into a single unit. The other way to express it is something that we've seen in the Baal Tosafot in other places, not here, which is dat makneh. It makes a difference when there's a party granting you rights versus a case where you're trying to take rights yourself. In the case of a mecher, not only are you acquiring, the mocher is also selling to you. And so when he's giving you control or relinquishing control to you, in that sense, when he relinquishes all 10 fields to you, your chazaka on one of those fields is enough to take possession because he's helping you with the kinyan. You're taking, but he's giving. Over here, by the nixei ager, or by the matana, but this would be less, so by a matana, you are trying to unilaterally take possession of it without help from a grantor of the kinyan. Given that, you would have to make a separate kinyan in each object because you don't have the help of the dat makneh. So now the Gemara says, Bayi Rabbi Zera, premised on the statement of Rabbi Asiyam Rabbi Yochanan, if what you're saying is true, Zera now questions, what about this scenario? In a case where, Hekzik ve'achat mehem liknoto ta ve'eta meitzar, ve'et chaverta, he takes possession of one of the properties with the intent of taking possession of the property and the border, and then the other property. So we said before what separated between the properties was the meitzar. So now, if I intend through my acquisition to also take the meitzar, can that then join the properties? Because obviously the meitzar is connected to the property, because it is the border between the properties. So it has relevance to the property that you are in. So if you acquire the property you're in, it would make sense that you should be able to also acquire the meitzar. Once you've done that, you've now reduced the significance of the meitzar between the properties because you are going to become the owner of the meitzar as well. Once you own the meitzar, can you then say that the properties that are adjacent to each other also can be acquired through that ownership? Mao, what do we say in that case? The girsa that we have is mi aminin meitzar de ara chadhu, that the meitzar and the land are considered to be one entity, and therefore you can acquire the meitzar along with the acquisition of the land. Or you can see the Bach brings an alternate girsa, which is hai meitzar de hai ara u de hai arahu. The meitzar is the connecting tissue between the two properties. And therefore, if I can acquire the meitzar, I can also be able to acquire both properties. Bikani, and you're successful. Dilma, hai l'chudei kai v'hai l'chudei kai. Or do we say that the meitzar and the property are considered to be separate entities completely, even to the point by which if you acquire this property, you will not get the meitzar because the meitzar is considered to be an independent area or significant in of itself separate from the property. Given that, you would not acquire the meitzar, and obviously then you would not acquire the other property. Teiku, we leave this as an unresolved issue. By Rabbi Elazar, so now Rabbi Elazar raises a question, again, premise, Abravasi Yom Rabbi Yochanan, Hechzik v'meitzar liknot shtehen mahu. So here, instead of acquiring the land, and through the land trying to acquire the meitzar, and then the other property, over here, he just went to the meitzar. The meitzar, which is sitting between the two properties, if he takes possession of that, can he then, through that, take possession of the two properties? Mir minen ha meitzar afsara de arahu. It's an interesting term that the meitzar is the reins of the land. And therefore, vikoni, you're able to acquire it. This goes to the Gemara in Kedushin again, which is that if a person is holding the reins of the animal or the reins of multiple animals, he becomes the possessor. That is a kinyan of the animals. Because the reins, in some sense, are, number one, the control over the animal. But number two, they are the servicing the animal. And since they are servicing the animal, they're considered to be an extension of the animal. And when you take possession of the afsar, you hold the afsar, it's as if you're making a kinyan on the animal. So too over here, when it comes to the meitzar of the meitzar is definitely servicing the land. It protects the land. It demarcates borders for the land. So if I'm able to then take possession of that item, which is considered to be like the reins of the land, because either it protects the land, it surrounds the land, it controls, in a sense, the land, and therefore I should be able to acquire it in that way, or to simply say that the reins are servicing the behema, the meitzar services the field. So if I take possession of it, is that enough of give me access to the fields? And obviously here, where you're sitting on the meitzar, you have access to both fields, and that should give you a right of acquisition of both of them. Oh, zilma ha'iluchudekai v'aluchudekai. Would we say that each one is independent? As the way that the Rashbam explains it, is that meitzar is muflag ben asadeh. Meitzar and the field are completely separate areas. Gvoa u'namuch, it's higher, it's lower. U'chol echad makom chashuv bifnei atzmohu. Each one has enough significance independently that you can't connect between the two of them. And that's what we're saying over here. The acquisition of the meitzar is a location that is significant in and of itself. And given that, you can't use that to acquire the land because it's considered to be a separate entity. If you see the meitzar simply as an extension of the land, then you can talk about the reins of the land. You can talk about acquiring the meitzar and getting the land. If you see the meitzar as being independently significant, then your acquisition of the meitzar will have no impact on your ability to acquire the land, or it won't allow you to acquire the land, because you have to do each item separately in order to acquire it. Or as the Rashbam brings from the Gemara in Kiddushin, Ze ugdol biyado, when it comes to the rein, physical pulling of the reins will pull the animal along with it. On the other hand, Ze enu ugdol biyado, when you pull the meitzar, you act on the meitzar, that doesn't affect the land directly. And therefore, the equating of the meitzar to the reins is an incorrect comparison.
And once again, we leave this as a teku, unresolved. The Tosfot Reed asks you a question, brings down a daya along the lines of what you are suggesting, which is that the meitzar or the border over here, we've misunderstood it, or the way that we're explaining it, like most of the Rishonim do, which is that the meitzar is a independent area. And the question is, how independent is it from the land? And do you acquire it or you don't acquire it? And the Tosfot Reed, it brings down a position that is clear that you acquire half of the meitzar. Because any wall or dividing line between properties, half belongs to one property, half belongs to the other property. So the question here is not about the half that is closer to your field. That you definitely would acquire because it's considered to be a part and parcel of your field. The question is, can you acquire the other half of the meitzar? So the question here is not about the half that faces your field, but rather the half that faces away from your field. When you acquire the field, if you have in mind to acquire the meitzar, the other half, does it work? Or does your acquisition of the other half also help you to acquire the other field? All the statements then would be done in that manner. But this does acknowledge what you're saying, which is, of course you should have some connection between the meitzar and your property. Whereas the way that the Rashbam and other Rishonim read is that the meitzar is a completely independent, separate entity, and it's not a given that any part of the meitzar would come along with the land.
All right, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua, Shnei Batim Ze Lifnei Mizeh. You have two houses, one captive to the other. You have to walk through the outer house to get to the inner house. Hechzik Bechitzon Liknoto. You took possession of the outer house in order to possess it. Kano, you're successful. Liknot Oto Vetapnimi. If when you're standing in the outer house, you take possession of the outer house with the having in mind to take possession of that and the inner house, chitzon kana, pnimi lo kana, then the outer house you have possession of, the inner house you do not have possession of, they are considered to be separate entities, and therefore your acquisition or your ability to take possession of one does not influence the other. Knotet pnimi, if you're standing on the outer house and you're trying to then take possession of the inner one, af chitzon nami lo kana, then you're not successful at acquiring either of the properties. By the way, the Rashbam explains it over here is that you ain't adam koneh shelo midato. Person cannot acquire something that he does not have in mind or intent for acquisition. So here he's standing on the outside property, and then he wants to acquire the inner property. Not only is he unsuccessful at acquiring the inner property because he's not there, but he's also unsuccessful at acquiring the outer property because he didn't have that in mind. He had no intent for that. We can't force an acquisition or give him rights
if he didn't want those rights or didn't look to gain those rights. So even though he could have acquired the outer property, but because he didn't have in mind to do so, we don't automatically, or he doesn't automatically get a kinyan. A kinyan is midat. You need to do that actively. You need what's called gemirat hadat to generate that acquisition or bringing the property into your possession. That is, if you were working from the outside, trying to acquire either the outside property or the inner property. In the reverse, now what happens if you are in the inner property and hegzik mipnimi liknoto kano? If you're in the inside property and you intend to acquire it, you are successful at acquiring it. Liknoto tov et achitzon. If he tries to acquire the inner property and the outer property by standing in the inner property, kana shnehem. Here's the one exception where it works. You get acquisition of both of them. The reason being is because the inner property has easement rights to walk through the outer property. That means that he has a shibud on the outer property. Being in the inner property not only grants you the rights to the inner property, it also grants you rights of easement or access through the outer property. So not only do you have, when you exercise your right to acquire the inner property, do you have an effect on the inner property, you also affect the outer property. Because of the fact that the inner property is captive and you must pass through the outer property, the acquisition of rights is not only a right vis-a-vis the pnimi, it's an acquisition of rights to the chitzon. And therefore, if you try to acquire both of them, you will be successful because the inner property has relevance to the outer property. That's what we've been discussing all along here. That how do you create relevance between the different properties in order that one will acquire the other? So we said in the Gemara in Kiddushin, the money was able to join the properties together. Over here, what joins the properties together is your rights of access and egress through the outer property makes it significant to the inner property. And thereby, when you acquire the inner property, you also are gaining the outer property. Kenota techitzon, if while he's standing on the inner property, he tries to acquire the outer property, apnimi lo kana. You fail over here in both counts, because the chitzon only has significance if you have the pnimi. You can't say that I'm not taking possession of the pnimi, but yet, because the pnimi has rights to go through the chitzon, I'm going to take the chitzon. Doesn't work there because you didn't take possession of the pnimi. If you take possession of the pnimi, then those rights will give you significance or relevance to the outer property whereby you can acquire both of them. But if you're simply trying to acquire the outer property from the inner property, that you can't do. You'll fail at both of them because not you didn't acquire the pnimi. And you're trying to create the chitzon that doesn't have relevance to you because of the fact that you have yet to acquire the pnimi. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Barvua. Rachman says the name of Barvua, Bonet Plaltarin, someone who builds like a mansion, a palace of sort, Gidolim B'nechse Ager, on the property of Ager, Ubacher, V'emid Lehen Daltot, Kana. And then the latter party comes and puts up the doors, he acquires it. Wow. That's a big chiddush that he's saying over here. And my time, what's the reason? Kama livne ba'amahu da'apich. The first party, all he did was stack bricks on the property. So here you have a discussion amongst the Rishonim, we'll see in a second what that means. But, in a sense, you did nothing to the property that gives you rights to the property. In order to get chazakah, or to do something that gives you ownership over the property, you must do something to the property itself. So here, when you come and stack bricks on top of the property, meaning that you just build a house on top of the property, you have done nothing of significance vis-a-vis the karka. Elaim Kane, you put up doors. Once you put up doors, then you've made it into a binyan that is usable now as a house or a living space, a residential space on the property. That already is something of significance that will grant you the kinyan here, because now you've transformed the property from before being a field into a residence now. The Baalei HaTosafot are bothered by a number of things, which is, number one, don't you have to dig to put in a foundation? When you put up a house, you have to put in foundations and you're digging in the ground. And we said that with regards to chazakah, oderba, if you just hoe, you move the land a little bit, you just dig up a little piece of the land, then that's a chazakah and you acquire it. Here he's digging big trenches or whatever he's doing to put up the foundations. Shouldn't that be enough for him to acquire the property? So the Baalei HaTosafot answer over here and say that Oder is significant because there you're utilizing the land for planting. You're utilizing the land in a way that leaves it as the status quo, which is it is a land of production, and you're doing something to facilitate the production. On the other hand, when you dig the foundations in the ground, your digging over there does not improve the land. Actually, as the Baalei HaTosafot would say, it actually hurts the property or ruins the property. Because the foundations right now make it impossible to plant the land anymore, to utilize it for production. On the other hand, you have yet to put up something that's significant enough that it would change it from being a farming property to a residence. And so therefore, your digging into the ground is not an action that will grant you a chazaka over here. The way that the Ramban formulates it is that the foundations are dug to be filled. You're not digging them so that they remain that way or it's going to be utilized in that way. You only dig them just to fill them back in. So you pour the foundations and you put the foundation there, and therefore it's not a digging of significance, because the whole point of the digging is to refill it. So then the Baitas would say, okay, let's grant you that the foundation's not enough. But you built the house and you didn't put on the doors. Why isn't that significant? If it was raining outside and you needed somewhere to run for cover, you'd go in there even though there were no doors. It was boiling hot outside, the sun's beating down on you. Wouldn't you go in there to escape the heat, even though there are no doors on it? The Baal Tosafot again here say, Vishomar mikomakom lo chazi d'dirat keva. When you don't have doors on it, it cannot be used as a permanent residence. Kozman shein badaltot. Da'ad rabba kilkaka d'miyakara chazi l'zriah, hasha lo chazi l'zriah. This is what I said before, that until it becomes a permanent residence, in some senses you've detracted from the value of the property. Before, the property could have been farmed. Now you blocked it from being farmed. That little hana'ah or benefit that you created that someone can escape the heat or the rain, that's not enough to overcome the detriment that you have done, which is the ruining of the property for Zriyah. So you've made no improvement to the property until you make it into a residence that is usable as a residence. So Tosafot says you need a transformation of significance in the land to give you the chazakah over here. The Rashbam takes a much simpler approach and just says, "Dechilat binyan inu ikar ela gamro," that the beginning of a building is not significant, but rather the completion of the building is what is significant. So the Rashbam, in a more succinct way, is probably saying what the Baalei Tosafot are saying. He's just saying it in more general terms, which is the starting a building is very different than the completion of the building. All the significance is in the completion of the building. So putting up the doors is that significant action that makes it into a functional space. And given that, that's why that person is the acquirer of the property. The Baalei Tosafot are trying to articulate what exactly is that transition point, or why there are transition points that are more significant than others. Right now, in terms of the building on the property, we have to assume that the blocks, the bricks, or the stones that he's using to build the item belong to the ger as well. Because if you brought your items onto the property and built on the property, that we already saw earlier in the Masechta and Bava Metzia, you come and build on a piece of land without permission, and you do something to improve the land. Does the other person have to compensate you for what you have done? So the question is, do you have permission? Do you not have permission? And without permission, have you benefited the property or not benefited the property? But over there, clearly, if you're bringing items from the outside, then you should be no worse off than someone who builds on a property of someone else where you do not have permission. And there the other person can throw you off the property, but he can't confiscate your possessions. So given that, you have your value, if you put value on the property, the other person can't all of a sudden put on the doors and say, it's all mine. The doors are his, but the remaining of the building is yours. In the case where you're using the ger's property to build it, then in that case, since you're using the ger's property, you haven't done anything that is monetarily yours. And therefore, when he puts on the doors, he's not only claiming the rights to land, he's claiming the rights to all of the stones, the bricks, all that property of the ger that remains on his property. So then he can do something through the putting up the doors, which is significant enough to acquire everything. But again, if he's putting up doors on your items, then you could tell him, take your doors and my items stay. His putting up the doors will not be significant because he doesn't acquire the house then, because the house is yours. So then through putting up the doors, you will not acquire the property. So that's why the Rishonim lean towards saying that the materials used to build over here are materials of the ger and not your own personal materials. Because if they are your personal materials, his putting up the doors will not make them his materials. He can't all of a sudden confiscate your property. Right, I'm taking my bricks, so you take your doors out. The doors aren't significant in and of themselves. So that's why it would not be a significant action. Here it's a significant action because you're using the property of the ger. Therefore, when he puts up the doors, not only does he get the land, he's going to get the whole house. Everything is going to come together with this significant action of putting up the doors. And now we have Amar Dimi Bar Yosef, Amar Balazar. Amutzim Paltarin Benichse Ager. Someone who finds this palatial estate mansion on the property of a ger. V'sad behen siud echad. He does some little plastering. Okiur echad. Or he does some design or drawing there. Kana'an. He is successful at being kunedem. So over here, as opposed to just simply putting up the bricks on the property, over here you're doing something to improve that which is existing already. There is a property there. When you put plaster on, when you draw drawings on the wall, you've enhanced the beauty or the value of that which is there. That's considered to be significant in your ability to acquire the property. Vikama, how much do you have to do in order for it to be considered significant? Am Rabbi Yosef, Amma. It has to be one Amma. Most point out that means an Amma by an Amma. So an Amma squared is the significant area. Am Rav Chista, Ukeneged HaPetach. And it's opposite the doorway when you walk in. Because, as the Rashbam points out, when people walk in, opposite the doorway is a space of significance. Therefore, the smaller space already will be considered to be significant. If you do it other places in the house, then you would have to make it bigger in order that it would take on significance. Because that's what we want here. We want you to make a improvement that has its significance, so therefore it's valuable and you can acquire through that significant action. So if you do it anywhere else in the house, you're going to have to make it bigger for it to gain significance. When it's opposite the door, then anybody who walks in bumps into it right away, then even a smaller space will have significance. I'm just going to note this over here. We'll get to it later on in the Gemara. There is a Gemara later on Samach Amud Bet, and these terminologies that you see here are going to be repeated over there. It's interesting that the Rishonim don't mention or don't connect between them. Not even does the Mesorat HaShas note that this Gemara is going to be repeated later on. But the Gemara repeats this with regards to Zecher the Churban HaMikdash. When it comes to doing something that is Zecher the Churban HaMikdash, you have to leave out a space opposite the door that is an Amma by an Amma that lacks seed, that does not have plaster on it. To me, it connects very directly to this Gemara. And that is that what Rav Dimi Bar Yosef Amar Rav Elazar is saying over here is that this is considered to be an action of significance. So an action of significance is sufficient to acquire the property that will also be significant enough to be classified as Zecher the Churban. So if you do it opposite the doorway, you only need an Amma by an Amma, because everybody will see that as soon as they come in. And the same thing, that the lack of Sid in that space will be significant, because the placing of Sid there would be significant if you did it and you put the Sid there. And that's considered to be a significant enough action to be classified as Zecher the Churban. So just keep that in mind when we get there on Samach Amud Bet, that it's connected to this comment over here. Amar Rav Amram, Hai Milta Amar Lan Rav Sheshet, Varinu Einen Mimetznita. Rav Sheshet made this comment, and he asked us to investigate if we could find Tanaic support for his statement. Hamatziah Mitzahot V'Knisei Ager, someone who sets up beds in, or mattresses, makes beds or mattresses inside the possession of the ger, kana. He is koneh. That's the statement of Rav Sheshet. Varinu mi matnita mahi. What was the bright or the Tanaic work that we brought to support Rav Sheshet? The Tanya. And we brought the support from the following brighta, which is the Tanya. Ketzad bichazaka. How does one establish a chazaka? Over here we're talking about the acquisition of an eved kna'ani. And the Gemara in Kiddushin describes what are the mechanisms for acquiring an eved kna'ani. Remember, he's deemed to be like property. And therefore, kesef, shtar, and chazaka all work. So chazaka, ketzad, what is the way that a chazaka works over here? Na'al lo manalo. He put his shoe on him. Oh, he tir lo manalo. He took his shoe off of him. So this is talking about a case where an eved kna'ani services the individual. In servicing the individual, that's a chazaka to acquire him as an eved kna'ani. So if he puts your shoes on, or he takes your shoes off, meaning that he's acting in the capacity as an eved towards you, that's a means of acquisition or kinyan, because you're establishing a chazaka over here. Or he carries his items to the bathhouse after him. You're walking to the bathhouse and this guy's schlepping your clothes and your towels and everything behind you to the bathhouse. Vishito. Or in the bathhouse, he strips him down. Virchito. Or he bathes him. Sacho. He anoints him. Gardo. He combs him. That's what we spoke about before earlier in the Masechta. The gardo or geret means to scrape. Over here, gardo, they used a comb to comb the skin or to defoliate dead skin. Vil bisho, or he dresses him in the bathhouse. Vinilo, and he puts on his shoes. As the Rashbam points out over here, this was unnecessary. because you're already in the beginning of the Brayta that spoke about putting his shoes on, but this is just in the order of the natural progression through and visit to the bathhouse. So it said, put on his shoes, Vigbio, and then he carried him, Kono. In those cases, he is Konehim. So the way that most people explain Vigbio is that the Eved carried the master home, that he put him on his shoulders and he hauled him home. That is a form of kinyan because you're acting as a master because he's acting like a slave in carrying you home type of work. That would imply that the individual carrying the other is the slave because the other one is sitting or riding on the back of the Eved. So in all these cases, you would take possession of them. Amar Rabbi Shimon says, Lo tei chazaka gdola me'agba'a. Why should a chazaka work more than agba'a? Shagba'a konem b'chol makom. Because agba'a is stronger than a chazaka because it works in any location. For instance, it works even in Rishut HaRabim, it even works in Rishut HaMocher. Agba can overcome a lot of other deficits where Kinyan Mesira, Kinyan Meshicha might not work. So Agba is a very strong form of Kinyan. Rabbi Shimon's statement is somewhat cryptic and the Gemara will go back and try to understand it. Now, the question is, when Rav Amram said we found this Braita to support Rav Sheshet, what is the proof from the Braita to Rav Sheshet? So the Rashbam claims over here, we learned it out from the case of taking possession of the Eved Kanani, whereby you are having the Eved Kanani service you. And just like the Eved Kanani is servicing you, so too, when you put the beds down and the mattresses in the land is servicing you. It's facilitating your ability to lay down or work there. And since you are getting hana'ah from the gufa karka, you're benefiting from the karka itself, the way that the Rashbam explains it over here, so that the way that you can get an acquisition is now gadaru paratz. Those are actions where you do a tikkun in the karka. You're actually changing something in the land. You're making an improvement. You're changing the dynamic of the land. Ela shenenem gufa karko. Over here, you're not doing anything to change the land, because all you're doing is setting up beds or mattresses there, but nevertheless, you're getting benefit from the land. Sheshivsha shto karka vichazaka. When the land services you, that is considered to be a chazaka. And so too, just like over here, when the Eved Kanani services you, that generates a chazaka. So too, over here, where the land services you, that grants you a chazaka. And then the Rashbam goes on to say, v'nira be'inai, minhocha yofina. How do we know that that's the case? That not only when you make a change in the land, you acquire it, but if you get benefit from the land, utilizing it, residing on it, that gives you a right. He says, the nafgalan karka nikne b'chazaka b'kiddushin mehai kran. You remember the psukim that the Gemara brings in Kiddushin to support the fact that one can acquire land through chazaka. These are the two psukim it brings. One is, v'shavu b'areichem asher tafastem. You should reside on the land that you took possession of. B'mah tafastem. How did you take possession of it? B'yeshiva. By simply residing on it. V'od mechtiv yirashtem otav yishavtem ba. You inherit it and reside in it. But may yirashtem. How did you acquire it? How did you inherit it? B'yeshiva. By living there. By residing there. So therefore you see that yeshiva, residing on the property, is deemed to be a benefit from the property that grants you rights of ownership. He says the same thing over here. When you lay on the ground, when you set up shop on the ground, you are benefiting from the ground to the point by which you have now gotten residence, in a sense, in the property, and that hana'ah grants you ownership over here. So the Balei HaTosafot point out that dafka hitzia, that's only if you set up mattresses and you put out things to sleep on. Havalalach b'bayit u'shachav, you went into the house, so you simply laid down on the parakarka, lo kana, you're not successful. Vafilu matza mitot mutzot. Or if you found beds already set up, vishachav, and you sleep on them, lo kana, you are not able to be konan. Because you need chazaka chashuva beinan. In order to establish your rights of ownership here, you need something of significance. The two aspects of significance, as the Balei HaTosafot will point out, is first of all, you take action to facilitate your ability to benefit from the land, and then you benefit from the land. So you need both of these items. You need both an action, plus you need to benefit. If you have one without the other, it will not be significant enough to grant you ownership. And that is, if you just put out beds, so you've done an action, but you haven't benefited, that won't work, because you're not doing anything to the gufa karka. You're not affecting the land itself, you're doing things on top of the land. The other hand, if you just lay on the land, where you're getting hana'ah from the land, But that's not significant enough, because even a passerby could lay on the land, fall asleep, take a nap, and walk on. The fact that you set up beds and then slept on the land where you got benefit from it after taking an action, that is significant. That's considered to be establishing residence and getting benefit from the land, and that's what will grant you ownership over here. Others want to suggest that the connection between the Braita and the statement of Rav Sheshet has to do with the fact that the Eved is dressing you. Just like the Eved dresses you, that's a demonstration of ownership. So too, when you dress the land, that's also considered to be an action of significance. That's a little harder because you actually have it going in the opposite directions. By the Eved Kenani, the Eved Kenani is dressing the Adon, and that's what establishes the chazaka of the Koneh on the Eved Kenani. Over here, you are dressing up the land by putting the Mita Mutzeret on it, and you want to acquire the land. So the parallel is not exactly the same, and therefore there are those that reject that understanding of the connection between the statement of Rav Sheshet and the Braita. So now the Gemara continues. My Kamar. What is Rabbi Shimon saying in the latter part of the Braita? Hachi Kamar. This is what he says. Higbio the Rabbo. If he lifted up his master, Kano, he acquires him. Higbio Rabbo lo. If his master lifts the Eved up, lo kina'o, it doesn't work. So that's what we said in the Braita. When it says Higbio, the way that Rabbi Shimon's interpreting the statement of the Tanakama is that if the master lifts him up, no kinyan. If the Eved lifts up the master, yes, kinyan, because the lifting of the master by the Eved means that the Eved is functioning like an Eved Kenani, and that's what establishes the Chazakah. Then the master lifting the Eved up doesn't work, even though it's a kinyan Agbah, because you're not acquiring it in the normal way that people would acquire an Eved Kenani. People don't lift up an Eved Kenani in order to acquire him. That's not one of the normal mechanisms for acquisition. As the Rashbam says, the lo shaychi agbah kim imitautale. Only when you're talking about movable items, when you're talking about non-real property, do you speak about agbah. Shein derech agbiyah b'nei adam. You don't normally lift people up. You don't normally acquire people or lift people up. Therefore, it's not the normal mechanism for kinyan, and it fails over here because of that. Even though agbah works in other places, over here it would fail. Elaim kain, the agbah is done in a way that the person is servicing you like an eved. Maybe he bends down so you can use him as a stepping stool to get up into your bed. He lifts you up to get into a location or carries you somewhere. All of those are activities that an eved would provide to his adon. Therefore, the lifting is considered to be a kinyan, not because of the lifting itself, because of the utility that you are benefiting from this slave. So Rabbi Shimon says, "I'm Rabbi Shimon Lotei Chazaka Gdola Mihagba." How could it be, or why should it be, that a chazaka is better than a hagba? Shagba koneh b'chol makom. Hagba works everywhere. So what he's saying in essence is, hagba is the super kinyan. It works everywhere. It always functions. It's always successful because it is able to acquire b'shuta mocher, which Meshicha and Mesira can't do. And it also works in Rishut HaRabim. It works in a Simta. It works in every location. And therefore, how could it be that a Chazaka is stronger or has more application than Agbah? If Chazaka can work, so can Agbah over here. And what Rabbi Shimon says is, if you lift up the Eved, it should be successful at acquiring the individual. Amar Rabbi Yirmi Abira, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Haiman Deshada Lifta Bepile De'aro. Someone who throws a turnip head, turnip seeds, into the cracks of the land, pili adara de ger, into the property of a ger. So the ger's property, which is now hefker because he passed away, has cracks in it, and he goes in and tosses a seed in there. Lo avi chazaka. That's not considered to be zoreya. That's not considered to be planting the land by which you will take a chazaka. As the Rashbam points out over here, hashlachat zer bakarka inu maseh. Throwing a seed onto the land is not considered an action. Elam kein zoreya, unless you plant, v'charkach michaseyu, and then you cover it over. Seeding or planting, that activity or action is characterized by the placing of the seeds in the ground and then covering those seeds up. To toss a seed into a crack on the ground, that's not considered to be zoreya. And if it's not classified as zoreya, you're dumping your garbage in his ground. You're not doing anything of significance to the ground to allow you to acquire it. My taima. What's the reasoning? Be'idana deshada lo avishvacha. When you throw the seed in there, there's no benefit garnered by the property. You haven't changed anything. So if you cover over the seeds, then you've already worked the ground. And we already said that a tikkun kosher would be sufficient to generate the acquisition. That's classified as zoreya, to simply toss something into the land. And by itself, it falls into a crack. Even if you intended for it to fall into the crack, you haven't done any tikkun in the karka itself, and that won't grant you a right of ownership or a chazakah over here. Or you could argue that the planting of seeds in this manner will not have the whatever grows afterwards grow well. If you take care in the way that you're planting, the resulting growth will be something that is of a higher quality. And therefore, you've made a change or done some improvement on the land. To simply toss a seed there, seeds can fall by themselves, can grow by themselves. You haven't done anything that's a qualitative improvement in the land, and therefore, it's not considered to be a chazakah. Hashu the kol shavach, v'melo k'shavach. If that seed in the end roots, and then something grows from it, it happened by itself. It wasn't because of your contribution. It was because the seed by itself was successful at growing. In order for it to be classified as zoreya, where you are the active party creating the value here, you must plant the seed in the ground, cover it over, then you would be classified as the planter or the improver of the land. But simply to toss something on the land does not give you those rights. Amar Shmuel, Haiman de Pashach Dikla, someone who prunes a palm tree, Adaita de Dikla Koni. If he does it for the benefit of the palm tree, then you are a koneh, because then you've taken an action of significance that improved the tree by pruning it for the improvement of the tree. Adaita de chayuta, if he did it to feed his animals, lo koni. You're pruning the branches, even though mamela, it will help the tree grow, or it'll be classified like pruning. Nevertheless, since you did it and your intent was for feeding the animals, you're not koneh here because you didn't do anything to improve the property, midato. Hechi dami. So the Gemara wants to know, how do you know whether he is pruning it for the benefit of the tree, or he's pruning it to feed it to his animals? Because in both cases, you could be doing both, which is, you could be pruning the tree and then feed it to your animals, and it would be to the benefit of the tree, or you could be feeding your animals, but what you take off turns out and ends up being pruning. So how do I determine which is his primary intent? Shaka mehai gisa mehai gisa. If he is taking off branches evenly around the tree, then adaita de dikla. Then it's clear he's doing it for the benefit of the palm tree because he cares about where he's pruning the branches from. So that shows that his primary intent is pruning. If he gives it to his animals afterwards, fine. But kula mechad gisa, if he prunes the tree, meaning that he takes off the branches all from one side, adaita de chayuta, then it's clearly that he's doing it to feed his animals because the tree does not concern him. Because the way that he is pruning or taking the branches off the tree is making the tree lopsided. It's actually hurting the tree, not benefiting the tree, because you're now putting all the weight and all the growth on one side and pulling it off on the other side. So your complete disinterest in the tree shows that the primary reason you're taking these off is for the animals to eat and not to prune the tree. And in that way, we will know whether he intends for a benefit or improvement of the tree, or he simply taking the branches off to feed his animals, and maybe as a side benefit, it happens to help the tree out, but that's clearly not your primary intent over here. And as the Rashbam points out over here, both in the case of the Lefet, as in the case of the Dekel, even though you might be getting benefit over here, if you eat the Lefet that you planted in the ground, when you eat that Lefet, why isn't that considered to be Hana'ah that you're going to garner? So yeah, you threw the seed in, it grew by itself, but now that you're picking the fruits or taking the fruits off, why is the next going to be on? No? So the Rashbam clarifies for us. V'achilat lefet nami eina chazakah. Eating a turnip from the field is not a chazakah. D'achilat perot eino koneh. That eating of fruits is not a mechanism for acquisition. And it does not create a chazakah. Because when you eat fruits or the production of your friend's field, it's a way to demonstrate ownership over a long period of time. It works for the chezkat shloshanim, because then you're demonstrating or acting like an owner of the field over a period of time. But the particular action of picking fruit in and of itself does not establish a chazakah, because the action itself is not considered to be an action on the property. It's considered to be picking of the fruits. You're taking the fruits, but you're not dealing with the property, improving the property. You're simply benefiting from the property. Now, over a period of time, over a duration, if you benefit from the property in that way, you can establish a chazakah of ownership instead of a shtar being necessary, because you are acting like an owner, because owners pick the fruits off the fields. But if you just simply go in there and pick a fruit, that doesn't necessarily demonstrate ownership immediately, because, again, you didn't do anything to the land itself. You simply took a fruit off the tree. Even outsiders can come into a field and pick fruit. Or if the balabayit gives them permission to go take some fruits, that's not necessarily a demonstration of ownership. And also over here, even though when you prune the palm tree, memela, as a result or an unintended consequence, you also benefit the tree, that will not allow you to acquire the property. As we said before, you can't make a kinyan shalomi dato. And that's what the Rashbam says over here. Kevin deinu mitkavein letakein akarka, since he has no intent of improving the land, dumi anana begadar, elo likat peidrot mitkavein, he simply just wants to pick the fruits, take the branches to feed his animals. It's similar to what we said before. It's like someone taking a possession of an item, shalomidat, without knowledge, without any intent. That lack intent or knowledge to acquire over here, even though it happens mamela, it's a byproduct of your action, that is not sufficient grounds to create a chazak or an acquisition over here. Okay, we're going to stop here. 7 lines down on the top of Nun Daled Amud Aleph.